Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Scarlett.
And I'm Mim.
And welcome back to Style Over Substance, the podcast. Mm-hmm. Today, we are going to be talking about the interview process for applying for jobs in fashion.
Yep.
We've already talked to you guys about the reasons we both left fashion. So if you haven't watched those episodes, definitely have a look at those. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're sort of expanding a little bit on the fashion journey, working in fashion. Mm-hmm. And one of our really big pet peeves is the interview process in fashion.
Yeah. And I think this like episode is going to be really insightful for those who are genuinely thinking about going into the fashion industry. I don't know about you, but I mean, when we started in our careers, YouTube wasn't as it is now. It wasn't so much of a resource. But I think just even now, what we see of the fashion industry is through influencers and through the glamour of it.
Yeah.
And not like the back end of people being honest about their experience and what it entails. Fashion is also is always about like the illusion of things, as we've kind of touched on in previous episodes. Mm. So it's easy to make assumptions about what it would be like interviewing, getting the job, the pay, the all of that. So hopefully it's really helpful for everyone.
Yeah, and I guess we're also taking it from a few different stances. Mm-hmm. So my stance has been from design base, whereas you have had sort of a somewhat merchandising and buyer experience also.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And the first thing which you mentioned earlier to me is that like just because you're doing a fashion interview doesn't mean you're meant to dress fashionably.
Yeah. The thing is, that's the thing, you like assume, okay, I want to like
show like my cool fashion, I want to show like my flair,
yeah.
my style. No one cares.
Can you do the job, really?
Yes. But it's also a professional
environment.
But also, I have also had on the flip side where you kind of come smart and it's a super casual office.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think you have to treat it like a smart interview. And then once you're in the job, you can decide to dress down, because likewise with you, where I worked last, my director was wearing hoodies and I was like, New Balances. And I was like,
our head of design used to come in her pajamas.
That's disgusting. I bet they were clean, but that's not.
They might not have been. She might have just rolled out of bed, but like super, like, you know, when you're like, I'm going to work in fashion. And then it's like,
yeah.
And that's how we all dress.
Everyone was super casual.
Yeah.
But even so, like, I don't think you really need to portray personality through your dress sense when you interview.
Correct. Yeah.
Just wear a shirt and wear like trousers. But then having said that, this was a while ago, so I don't know what it's like now, because it's like a different generation coming. We're not that old. It's like a different generation coming up through the like entry level ranks now.
Yeah, and the business world is ever evolving.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So I think I remember dressing in like smart trousers, a shirt, maybe like loafers or something, and then that was that was my experience. But let's talk about like the number of interviews.
So yeah, I mean, so for different scales and different levels, entry level for me, intern,
okay,
I had one interview, and then any level above that, I had at least two.
It's weird because to me, one interview feels like not enough to know the person.
It's a free job. It's a free job.
That's true.
It's a free job. They made me bring my portfolio. They really like made it feel like, so like, who are you interested in fashion? Do you know how to pattern cut? Like, let me see your portfolio. You can sketch. Yes. Okay. I was getting people lunches.
Yeah.
I was running across town and picking up fabric rolls. Mm. I did actually help with pattern cutting and all of that stuff, but I mean,
it was a free job. I think that's
an internship is you're meant to be teaching someone something. So it felt like a heavy interview considering what my role involved.
Did you have to prepare anything for
not
that?
Not for that interview, no.
Okay. And then your next job thereafter, you had two. Two is quite standard for most jobs.
I think two is quite standard for most jobs because also having now been on the other side where like I help with recruitment in the role that I'm currently in.
Yeah.
Shock. I don't do anything to do with fashion.
Yeah.
You also need it for other people to meet the person. So it's, you realize actually, okay, we need it so that so-and-so meets you. Mm-hmm. And also like we want to, and I'm a big believer also that the interview process is a two-way street.
Oh, 100%.
Like, I you're need to know them. How weird you guys are too. I need to know, like, what you're offering me too. My favourite question to ask is, like, what is it that you enjoy about working here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, give me some hope that you enjoy working here. But, yeah, I think two is kind of standard, but it's maybe what the two involve. Whereas, but I know you've got a record of more than two.
So, yeah, if you listen to our previous episodes, I started in the fashion industry via the retail route, so shop floor. And I remember only having one interview for those. And that was just standard, like, being on the shop floor, being in the department
checking
store.
You're polite.
Yeah, like, you come, you, like, shower in the mornings, you smell okay.
You turn up on time
for the interview, and just things like that, and what's your general knowledge. But then thereafter, I think I had, when I entered the office, I kind of feel like I had a test somewhere in there, but when like I went into the office and I went into allocation specifically, I had two interviews. One, the first one, first off, you meet like the recruiting manager in HR for a little bit. She gives you a little spiel. Then I met who would be my actual manager for the first interview. And then the second one, they called me back and I spoke to I think she was an associate director or director. Mm-hmm. She was basically my manager's boss.
It's quite intense.
It was.
And a bit unnecessary.
Luckily, she was lovely. She was really nice. And I really liked her. And it ended up being not a casual, because no interview is casual, but it became...
Because you're grateful to be working in fashion.
Well, you want the job.
No, but that's what they also, like, let on. Like, I feel like the interviews, considering it is quite, like, a relaxed environment somewhat, like, people turn up in jeans.
Yeah.
The interviews feel quite intense.
Yeah, I think had it been any other personality in that second call, second interview, I would have been like shitting bricks because it's a high level and I was going in like entry level, wasn't I? So, but she was lovely and we had a really good chat, general chit chat. But then again, it was like testing me on my like wider market analysis where the business sits in with competitors and things like that. So you still had to prepare. But then my final interview within the fashion industry, I had three interviews. I had a project to do and obviously there was work involved in preparing for that project, but a lot. And partly there was three because I interviewed for one role and then they decided, no, let's offer her a role that's a step up from that because we don't have enough staff, so let's just roll this role into another role. And so I had to come back for a final interview to see if I could actually step up to that level. Yeah.
I mean, it's wild, but should we talk about projects and the kind of work that goes into interviews? So I had never, ever known that was a thing in an interview process.
What, projects?
Yeah.
Because you went to uni, so... Didn't anyone prepare you to say you will have a portfolio?
No. I had a portfolio.
And that
you... I thought my portfolio was the thing. I didn't know that I would have to then do a project on top of my portfolio. I thought that was the point of my portfolio.
Yeah. That's a disservice, though, because, like, and this is a grievance that you can have with all kinds of uni courses, but particularly, you were prepared to have a portfolio.
Mm.
So I would have thought that they would at least give you, and this is another point to make, but I would have thought that having the heads up that you would also have to prepare projects within your own time, in addition to your portfolio for jobs, would be like essential knowledge. And I think that when you have maybe staff or lecturers or tutors who haven't been in the industry for a long time, or never actually reached the level that you ended up reaching, they don't really have a knowledge of what an actual interview process is like, and therefore they can't impart that sort of knowledge onto you.
That's really true, actually. And even like the base level, so before we even talk about a project and we just talk about portfolio, you're meant to maintain your portfolio wherever you work.
Oh, okay.
So like, build on it. So you're meant to build on it. So obviously I worked at university, like, and then they care about, okay, so what's your portfolio at that job? So you're then meant to like put what you've done at your current job into your portfolio.
Okay.
And so that takes a lot of time. Like, you know, you've got to condense it. And also, like, obviously, as time goes on, like, you still don't want it to be 10 pages. So you've got to condense it. You've got to show off all your skills in a few pages. But, like, the reality is you don't do it as you go along, like anything.
You, like, cram
I don't update my CV as I go along. Yeah. I do it when I'm looking for a job.
Yeah.
And so you, when you're looking for a job, you not only update your CV, you then have to update your portfolio. And then if you're lucky enough to apply for a job and maybe get offered a second interview, you basically get asked to do a project.
Mm-hmm. So, for example, you had to update your portfolio. And to me, when I hear that, I think that in itself is a lot of work, because you are not having to just like look back on all the work that you've done, but you need the resources to recreate that sort of project that you've done and then put into your portfolio.
It's a case of like, okay, I've now got to go onto the company systems, retransfer myself.
It's like
files,
clandestine.
Which like is also kind of like somewhat frowned upon, even though like you've worked on it and it's a known fact you need a portfolio. But I'm like retransferring myself all these files.
100%. It's like when you it's like when you're in the office and you print off personal things. Like,
I need a form. Oh my god! For like, and then you're like straight away at the printer, like, no one can see. You're like, I printed off my flight details.
Yeah. Can anyone see I've printed off this? You know, like completely non-work related thing. That's bad enough, but.
So it also feels a little bit criminal. And obviously it's not nice applying for a job in a current job.
But when when you say that, I'm thinking that, is it, yes, you did the work on that project, but the design and the intellectual property, because you did it working for them,
it's
using their resources, it's not yours.
Yeah.
It is their work and it's for them to sell freely.
So the correct, but also, there's the issue of sharing. So you can only share work on a collection that's been released. So also it's really tricky where, say, like you're working on a really big collection or certain things you want to show off, but like, oh, that collection hasn't been revealed to the public yet.
Yes.
So I physically can't show you.
But have you, though, in the past?
No, I actually haven't.
Okay.
Like, because like it's a, I've always really cared where I've worked, like,
and it is really risky, isn't it? You don't want that.
And yeah, and they would probably know that too, and then you don't want to seem that way.
Yeah.
But God, like, so yeah, you've got to prepare stuff from your current job. Then you've got to prepare a project for the new place in your spare time, when you're working long hours, when you're spent, when you've already used all your creativity in your day-to-day job.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be designing for another brand. And also, every brand has a different aesthetic.
Yeah, of course.
So you've got your head into a different headspace, into a different like kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm just not a natural designer to do that. I don't know. But that felt quite taxing.
Of course.
Yeah, it just felt really a lot. And so then to like go somewhere and you basically just give somewhere your ideas for free.
We'll get into that. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I've got a tickle because we're talking. Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's really a lot of work.
So what sort of projects had you been asked to do in the past?
So I've only really experienced this twice. One was a capsule collection. So that's not too many. Maybe it's like 5 to 7 new styles.
That's a lot.
Yeah. But that, and included accessories, so that'd be key rings or small leather goods. Okay. And then, yeah, obviously thinking about a colorway and that kind of thing. And that was the collection where they asked for physical mock-ups of them too. I think actually, I don't know if they set me a project immediately with that one. I think I might have had to come to the first one with a project. They might have given me some feedback and asked for mock-ups the next time. I can't remember now. But, and so then, like, you get your hopes up, right? They've seen your designs, they've asked for a bit more, and then they ask for more.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was designing a collection, and they maybe will give you a theme. I know I chose like an art deco theme, which is like really up my street, and I'd already done loads of research on that.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't only how to apply it to accessories, it was like how it could be applied to other things. So like shoes, whatever.
Oh.
I've never drawn a shoe in my life. And so like, and lucky at the time, I had been made redundant from my previous fashion job.
Okay.
And I was trying to get back into fashion, and I was temping at some like pathetic office job.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have any work to do, so I could do it in that time. And so it meant I could do a really epic project.
Yeah.
But had I not had that time, maybe I wouldn't have landed the job.
Yeah, because, yeah, you mentioned to me previously that luckily your temping job was...
I mean, I was like, you absolutely had, doing them over, yeah.
Yeah, like, you were able to, like, use their time and resources to, like, dedicate fully to applying to this other role. In a normal circumstance, you would have had to do it evenings and weekends. And
they give you a short turnaround. It might be, like, 2 weeks, like,
yeah,
a turnaround. Because also they're trying to hire, right? So they don't have,
exactly,
unlimited time.
Yeah, they want to bring someone in as soon as possible, so you're having to like work on their time scale to make that happen. Yeah, and then when we like step back a bit and we consider the context of it, how much they're paying you for those roles, mid-20s I'm guessing, for okay, 2 interviews, a project, possible mock-up.
Let's think of a freelance rate, a freelance hourly rate. Freelance rate was better than what you would get paid.
Mm-hmm.
But even if that's, it's £10 an hour.
Yeah.
It's like, I've just spent all this free time on you.
Yeah.
To get a job, like you said, that's not even really paying that well.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, I'll reap the rewards once I get my job.
Yeah, because like... You have to remember that when you're in the interview also, you are also being asked questions that you've had to prepare for.
Mm.
So they're going to ask you off-the-cuff questions. And that could be based on your experience or what you can bring to the role moving forward, you know, typical interview sort of questions. And that's insane when you think about the hours that you spent, what you would have been paid at a typical job or your temping job for those hours, and you, there's no guarantee you're gonna get the job.
No, there's no guarantee. And also like the issue with it as well,
mm-hmm,
is just like you're essentially giving them like free ideas, and that's not just for design, right? So yep, you've had to prepare like business ideas maybe for people, or you've had to do stuff.
So I did have the experience of preparing projects, but it wasn't design, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I was given questions. I can't remember exactly, but it was a buying-related job. So I was given questions about maybe competitors.
SWOT analysis.
I can't remember if I did SWOT analysis actually, but that's always something you have to do, yeah, just for the sake of conversation in the interview. You have to be aware of who your competitors, yeah, yeah, are and what they're doing, and like what are we gonna bring into the store so that we are able to capture that like segment of the market. And so obviously my questions and my project that I had to ultimately like present my results and my answers regarding, it was like mathsy as well, and so yeah, there was a lot of prep work. And I've mentioned this in our previous episode, but luckily at the current job that I had a friend who was a buyer, and she was nice enough to give me advice on what to write, what to mention, what to do, how to structure my
because
project.
Because also that's the thing, right? You were then trying to go from essentially merchandising into buying.
Yeah.
And into like an entry-ish buying job. How are you meant to know it?
Yeah.
If you've never experienced buying before.
People don't... I did not come from uni or
but uni didn't even prepare me. And it's... I think this is a big thing that we've talked about so much in our personal lives, is like the uni and schooling needs to prepare you better for jobs.
Yeah.
Not...
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Education jobs,
yeah,
but like, how, like,
there's no way of you knowing,
and it feels really pressurized if someone's telling you like, what are our competitors doing, what's this, like, whoa, I'm 20, like what do you want from me?
You're winging it. You yeah. are winging it completely,
and you're telling that to somebody who's worked and lived and breathed the company for a while.
Oh my god, you know what, imagine if they like recorded your interviews and then like 5 years later they play it back to you, and there's like little like 25-year-old you being like, oh, I think that Todd's Shoes and they're doing like, they're capturing the segment of the market that, you know, formal footwear, and you're like, oh my god, hey, is that what I wore to the interview, and I'm like, is that what I said, what the fuck.
Yeah, it's really tough, and interviews not easy as it is, but I think when you're told to prepare stuff that isn't factual and is personal, it's interpretive, or it is like asking for your own resources. It's a lot, especially when the money is low.
For that, my last role, in preparation for my first interview, this was the first stage, I obviously was working on this project, as mentioned, and I had my buyer friend help me, but I also went into the store because from my understanding of preparing for jobs, it's like you go on the website, you check what the collection is, you see what, like,
can you tell us what we do?
Can you tell us what we do here? We sell stuff. And someone, I came from retail. Yes, I'd been working an allocation job, but previous to that, I came from retail, and knowing, I mean, even in my allocation job, we used to do trips to the flagship store. I mean, it was only around the corner, but going inside to the flagship store to see how visual merchandising had styled things, how it was presented, the position
of consumer experience.
Consumer experience, but also if you have a collection at the front of the store or in an area of high traffic, that is going to affect sales. So I thought to myself, I'm going to go into the store. It was in Sloane Square, and see what the customer experience is like, how things are laid out, what the current collection is. And I managed to like spend some time with one of the sales associates and get like a
real lowdown.
I told her I was interviewing, and she was really helpful. And to get that experience, and that was like me after
that's
work.
That's your own time.
Yeah, after work, spent like 2 hours, probably more than that, like going into the store, being there for an hour, going home, prepping for the stuff. And bearing in mind, you've mentioned this a lot, at the time, I really wanted this job. So I was going to do anything to get this job. And so for me, it was like a good trade-off. The potential of getting this job was worth the time and the effort. And it ended poorly. for me.
This is the tough thing of sitting out of it. Like, then you're suddenly like, why was I slogging my guts out? Like a job.
But remember, as you were saying, it's like, it's fashion. Everyone wants this job. Everyone wants to be a buyer at like one of the world's best menswear brands.
And also like the game as well. It would be like, I would be being told like, oh, you know. It's like, it's probably one.
Is that what they were saying to you?
Yeah, of course.
Like they would explicitly in the interview say, you know, we
obviously have a few other candidates.
Oh, like that. That's typical though. I would ask. I ask that question.
It's like, so terrifying. I think I feel a little bit more empowered now. But when you're sort of, and I think it's so personal, right? Presenting designs. You're sort of there like, tell me what you think.
Yeah.
I go easy on me. I think it's that's so different. Personal. And also,
like, I didn't have that
you
experience.
Haven't worked there. So you don't know what their no-nos are. You don't know, like, oh, we tried that and that bag has failed for us. You don't know any of it.
Yeah.
And also, like, one of the brands I went for was a little bit, like, kitschy. And I...
Was it Kath Kidson?
No. But it's like, they had a playfulness to them. But everyone's got a level of how much they think playful takes too far.
Okay.
And so it was kind of like, is this the, like, tongue-in-cheek that you like?
Yeah.
And it's like, but also I'm trying to not, like imitate what you already do, but just another iteration. I'm trying to, like, really think outside of the box with you.
You're trying to bring something new to their organization. That's the point of an interview.
But it's like, it's so daunting and all of that stuff. Whereas actually the last brand I worked for, they were very chic. Wasn't my style, but like I kind of knew the boxes to tick. It was elegant. It was like elevated. Okay. Like I knew kind of
you're
how
not
to
elevated or elegant.
No, but, like, that's not really... I wouldn't wear the bags that I was designing.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But, like, I kind of knew, like, the boxes to tick or what would, like, engage them a little bit.
I think it is far more personal when you are designing something from the top of your head. Oh. Obviously, it's inspired by what you've seen and whatnot, but to present designs that you've created is completely different to what I had to experience. Mine was, like, does this make logical sense from a sales perspective? Am I just making up things? But yours is like wearing your heart on your sleeve in the interview.
Yeah, and it's not easy, but also, so like we touched on it or like implied it a little bit earlier, but the issue also is with then intellectual property with these designs.
Yes.
And similarly with work, if you provided SWOT analysis or you provided some business plans for people, they can take your work and they can use that. Mm. If you had a really good idea for how they can kind of like reinvent stuff or bring something into the store.
Yeah.
People can use these ideas. It's obviously not trademarked to you. Or there's no intellectual property. Fun fact, I did my dissertation on intellectual property and fashion design.
Yeah.
There isn't any really. But yeah, so I had actually a really good friend who applied for a company that I actually did a project for.
Mm-hmm.
And they essentially just totally ripped off her entire project. Mm. It wasn't even like politely nodding to it. It was quite literally like, these are my designs. There's no protection there. There is, and because there actually is no intellectual property protection in fashion, it is really hard to protect your designs, but also, like, I guess in essence, there's probably a fine print, not even that you've signed a contract for this company, but like any work that somebody does for us is not actually theirs. It's blah, 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 blah.
But the thing is like little old you who earns 25K, let's say, who wants this job, there is no way that you can come up against an internationally known fashion brand that has a couple lawyers on their roster, you know, retained throughout the
and
year.
And also, you're only 25 grand, right? So if they just went, we'll pay you 500 pounds. I mean, not 500.
They said, we'll give you £1,000
for
the design.
Shut up. Like, you're going to take that,
there's
maybe.
There's a lot of people who...
They also don't even need to do that. They can just, they're intimidating enough to not.
It's very easy to be silenced or bullied or just feel like...
Were you silenced?
That should be our new slogan.
Oh my God, I love it. It's true.
You're going to think to yourself, I don't have the intellectual knowledge to understand my rights, to know where to apply, to afford to be able to get a lawyer who can fight my case that, like, I interviewed for you guys. This is what I showed at the time of my interview. And then you've gone on to directly rip me off. There's a lot. And when we see stories like this come on social media, or, and we've seen a lot of them in the past few years, of people who have interviewed for fashion brands and they've been ripped off, their designs have been taken, and they've not even been offered any job, and they don't receive any compensation or anything like that. You see in the comment sections of, like, oh, you know, you should fight this and blah, 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 blah. And yes, 100%, I believe that you should get what is due and owed to you. And these multi, like, these conglomerate, multi-million, billion pound companies shouldn't get away with it. But at the same time, you're a regular person with regular money, and life goes on. You're like...
Well, and also, if you actually still want to remain in fashion, it's a really small industry. Do you want to be the girl that sued... Kath Kitson, like, do you want to be the girl that sues Dior, but you want a job at Chanel, and Chanel are going to hear about it? Like,
yeah,
it becomes really tricky. But yeah, and also, like, again, similar to just a lot of the qualms and issues I have with fashion, is it's just generally accepted. Like, interning, free labor, the culture, the attitude, the low pay, the long hours, all of that crap is generally accepted by people. Yeah. Until you dig a bit deeper and you go, and you people be like, yeah, I don't really like it. But everyone accepts it. Yeah. And this is just a part of fashion. It's just how it is.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's okay. Really doesn't mean it's okay. But
yeah. I don't see anytime soon how the issue of retaining your intellectual property in an interview process can really be enforced or defended. I don't see how those things will improve over time, if I'm honest, because even these big brands are ripping off other big brands.
This is a thing, and this is why I wrote my dissertation on it, because you quite literally will see brands copy stuff. I mean, there was an issue that I put in my dissertation where YSL did a theme of all over color shoes. So quite literally, if it was a yellow shoe, the sole was yellow, the outie was yellow.
Oh, okay.
But equally, they did a red shoe. So the sole was red.
Yeah.
And that is trademarked by Christian Louboutin. But a trademark is, like, it's a really fine-tuned thing. It's also, like, the aesthetic. It's that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But also, I got to the bones of the fact that, like, Christian Louboutin's red sole he's not the first person who did a red sole.
Yeah.
It was actually something that happened in Louis the Sun King's time in the French Revolution.
Oh, okay.
So, like, some of the French royalty had red soled shoes.
Okay.
And so, like, so was that Christian Louboutin ripping off somebody else? I'm sure that's probably not the first we actually have heard of a red sole, like, but it's been the first documented thing of a red sole.
Whoever gets to pay for the it's trademark an idea first.
And this is the issue with fashion, is that, like, who gets, like, you can't trademark, or you can't have intellectual property on a t-shirt. Like,
it's too generic.
There's only so many things you could, like, there that can exist. So, like, and a color is, you can't trademark essentially a color, because there's only so many colors that exist. Placement and whatever you can a bit. But
we might need an episode about, like, Pantone, because maybe. I want to understand their whole business model and how they've become some sort of, like, tastemaker.
How is that a thing?
I don't even
color
know.
Of the year.
Yeah.
But it's really, really tricky. So, like, I could imagine turning up to an interview process and me going, like, here's my CV, but also please sign this. And actually, like, good for fucking you if you do that. I'd, like, feel really empowered maybe to do that now and be like, sorry, this is just a document to say, like, you've seen my designs, but you won't use them.
Yes. And I would be interested to know
and
how
their reaction
is.
Would probably not go down great.
No, not at your level, but
I mean,
I would,
like,
be...
influencer stuff, it'd be like Tommy Fury not signing the document from Jake Paul.
I'd be interested to see what the interview process is like for someone who's coming in at creative director level. You know, like, these really big names, or not even big name designers, but designers who we've not heard of before, who step into those big roles and go through, obviously they have very rigorous processes of and rounds to demonstrate that they are capable of taking on like the top job. But also they, I'm sure, are designing and presenting whole collections, whole visions for the brand. And I would like to know, you know, do they come in with their solicitor, with a document to
sign?
I guess it's
like anything in life, right? The higher up you are, the more respect you probably govern. And the louder the noise would be and the ripple would be if you say, that's my design.
But not necessarily. You can come out as, you can come up as a no-name nobody. True. Like, for example, the recent appointment of, I can't remember his name at the moment, but the new Salvatore Ferragamo creative director. He's this young guy, British, and I don't know him to be creative director of any other big brand. So to me, he's new, and to a lot of other people, he's quite new.
So he's not on the same level. You wouldn't really.
He's not Marc Jacobs moving around to a different brand.
Yeah,
you know, it's like if he kicked off, I'm sure. Yeah, we'd hear about it, you know, in like Diet Prada, and then the next week we've completely forgotten about it, unless he's taking it to court and like taking it the whole way.
Yeah, it's a real problem, and I think this is kind of like it. The beautiful thing, and like, don't get us wrong, like, I love fashion, I still really respect it.
Yeah.
And this part of the beauty of fashion, right, is that it feels untouchable sometimes.
Yeah.
It feels like, oh my God, that's so distant, that's so expensive, that's so lavish, that's so beautiful. Oh my God, like, who could own that?
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many like fantastical things about it.
Yeah.
But also, it's untouchable in the wrong sense too. It's untouchable in, the way that it seems like no one can stop it. It's current like cycle that it's in with these sort of things. I mean, again, like I'm out of it, so projects are always going to be there.
Yeah, of course.
Because also you do kind of need, like, a portfolio doesn't give you enough. Imagine you've designed for like Moschino and Missoni, and then you're applying to be like Celine.
Yeah.
It's that portfolio vibe. Is not going to show you if you can design successfully for Celine or Bottega. So you do need to get somebody to do it. I believe in that. But there needs to be some protection. And the same, like, imagine someone comes in with a fucking insane business idea, right? Imagine, like, someone walks into Bottega and, like, you know what you should do? A woven pouch. Like, obviously, became, like, a huge... Or when they're like got their huge pouch going on and they just go, you know what you should do? Weaving.
But you know what they should do? They should hire the person, pay the person.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to pay them directly for that particular idea, but you say, you are clearly talented.
Commission.
We want you to expand on that idea.
Yeah.
Come work for us.
Yeah.
Correct,
actually. Like, yeah, if I wasn't good enough to work for you, why was my idea so good that you stole it?
That's the thing. But in all, I think that in my experience, I've definitely interviewed my ass off for different roles in fashion. Obviously, the more desirable the job role is, the harder the interview process is. But it will always come down to the fact that, you know, you end up working long hours for very little pay, and there's a lot of preparation that goes into it.
It's a lot of work. And again, like, we're not super familiar with other industries to know if that's part and parcel. I think there are probably different rounds and maybe sometimes some work.
In my current role, I did have to do like an in-interview test and a project.
Yeah.
So I know that that is common. But I also get paid more. Like, let's not, it's incomparable to what I was expecting.
Well, you're climbing up the ladder, so it feels better, but also it wasn't eating into your personal time, which is a huge thing.
Well, to be honest, you know what?
God, here we go.
You know how you were saying that you prepared your project for that, your last role in fashion, you prepared the project
whilst
at a different job. well, my current role is not in fashion, but luckily my like last contract was winding down big time. Yeah. I had a lot of time on my hands and I was, you know,
preparing.
I was preparing on their time, of course. You've got to work smart and not hard.
Correct.
But yeah.
But when you're working a really long hour fashion job, which fortunately you weren't also at the time, how are you meant to?
Yeah. But I think in all, like, the fashion industry is it's an interesting one. We've been out of it for a little while, so we don't know what it's like now, but to be honest, it's probably the same. I doubt that anything has changed.
Yeah.
But yeah, hopefully this episode was insightful and helpful to any of you who are interested in joining the fashion industry. And let us know what your thoughts are on what, you know, what your experience has been and if
projects, all of that. But also, yeah, if you're new to fashion, don't be scared, just be prepared.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Get on a t-shirt.
Well, anyway, thanks for listening to the latest episode of our podcast. As always, follow us on YouTube, on podcast listening platforms, TikTok, Instagram, or email us if you have suggestions for our next topic at styleoversubstancepodcast@gmail.com. And we'll get back to you and we might even do the episode here. So, yeah, thanks for listening and we'll see you next Tuesday as well. Bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.